All right, welcome everybody to another episode of Stark After Dark. I'm your host, Jordan Clark, and this is the comic podcast all about comic romances and relationships. And today I'm joined by my co-key from another tree, Naomi Frankies.
Que lo que, mi gente? What's up, everybody?
me and Naomi were lucky enough and had a great time working on the Bitch Planet triple feature story that we did together for Image Comics. And she has gone on to do a number of wonderful things. And today, when I was asking her originally about what she wanted to talk about, she wanted to speak about all the things in comics specific to romances and relationships that really grinded her gears. So this is going to be an interesting show just to kind of hear. I have no idea what those things are, but I think we're going to find out as we go down the list. But
where to start?
Well, I think where we usually start is I want to get your favorite comic book romance, favorite comic book couple. Do you have a number one?
Huh. I can't think off the top of my head because most of the stories that I read aren't super like romance base.
I mean, we can expand it even further into manga or anime.
Oh,
those are things that jog the brain.
Well, let's see. Oh my god, look at my list right now. Definitely, going back to like manga or anime, like one of my favorite OG OTPs to go back to Dragon Ball Z would definitely be like Bulma and Vegeta.
Okay.
Absolutely. Just because spoiled rich prince, super genius, tech wife.
Right. You know,
bad dad t-shirts. It's great.
Is there any particular romance or relationship that you just hate and can't stand?
Not like one in particular, but there are specific tropes, like the classic throwback to, you know, Green Lantern finding his freaking girlfriend in the fridge, you know, the mm-hmm. the constant like, oh, she has to sacrifice something in her life, you know, for insert male character to
right.
thrive or have a plot or to be relevant in comics again. You know, he's sad, mm-hmm. you know.
Well, I think that's definitely it's been a mainstay in comic relationships, but also just media in general. Whenever there's yeah. a situation where, you know, they need to give the male hero something, you know, what I mean, he needs some motivation, and it couldn't be any like personal, like introspective thing that gets yeah. him going. It has to be who's the woman he loves, and how can we gruesomely murder them to get.
If it's not
to get his shit together,
if it's not a girlfriend or fiance, wife, you know, where's his mama at?
Right,
what's she doing? Come on, mama.
I mean, you know, they've killed Aunt May before in Spider-Man. You know, they've killed numerous wives, girlfriends, sisters, mm-hmm. significant others, and it's always like two things happen, right? And this is I think a very interesting just dynamic of all of that is a like superheroes die all the time, right?
Right.
And they always come back.
Okay, Gene.
Right. A lot of those women die and they don't come back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They're just dead forever.
Or like if we're gonna think about like, you know, let's think of Jean Grey coming back constantly. As right. like the Phoenix, but every time she comes back or leaves, you know, you have Scott or Logan, you know, spending how many arcs crying about it.
Right.
You know, it's happened 20 times before, but this time is the saddest time. This
right.
time, not the last 10 times, this time.
But even then, when she comes back, they still don't appreciate her. So it's like, what? Like, what does she have to do?
There was a tweet, and I hope I can find it again later, but someone was talking about, I want to write or draw a comic or with Jean Grey, but, you know, where she's just out there camping, living her best life, taking selfies in the woods, you know, like in the wilderness, and not fussing about, you know, Scott or Logan. And I want to read that. I want that slice of life Jean Grey where she can forget that she's, you know, also the Phoenix and eating cosmic bodies, you know, as a snack.
But you know what?
Story.
Like, I have a feeling that if Jean Grey ever just went off into the woods for like a weekend, when she came back, like, they'd be holding her funeral because they'd just be like, she died again.
Like, she was on vacation, y'all. I can't go camping without someone thinking I'm dead.
She can't live her best life. Like, they just won't let her for whatever reason. But yeah, you know, it's I think that's just a fascinating aspect, because A, I can't really think of, and hopefully, you know, in the comments somebody will correct me, but I can't think of any female hero who's had, like, the only thing I can think of is very recently, in, I want to say it was Civil War II, where War Machine died, and that was kind of what set off Captain Marvel into, like, locking everybody up, I guess.
Mm.
But then he just came back. You know what I mean?
Well, so all that stuff I did is not irrelevant.
So, like, it was, you know, it was like they kind of made it like, you know, she was so hurt by the death of her boyfriend that she would just lose her mind and, like, lock up all her friends with, like, this weird predictive inhuman power thing. And, like, it was just one of those things where it was like, well, I mean, she's acting completely out of character, but also, like, to kind of blame this on like her inability, because that was, I mean, you know, Justice League the movie was not good.
I haven't seen it.
The thing that frustrated me the most is that they tried to explain away why Wonder Woman had just gone into hiding for 100 years, and basically their answer was Steve Trevor died and she was really sad and, like, couldn't do anything for 100 years. And I was like, wow, like, after everything that you did in her own solo movie, like, you're gonna come back with, but, like, without the man in her life, like, she can't
come on, she can't live for 100 years. What will she do without a man?
I don't know.
Her first penis, and it was obviously, that's true love.
But, I mean, we've talked about this on the show as well before. Like, Steve Trevor, of all men, like, even, like, in the movie, he's, I find him to be better than he is portrayed sometimes in the comics.
Mm.
But, like, Steve Trevor is kind of, like, your first crush. Like, she'd never seen a man before.
Yeah.
And so, like, this was the first one she'd ever seen. And not to say, like, she can do better and move on, but, like, she could do better. I mean, Steve Trevor's not the only
dude. She could do better and move on.
Steve Trevor's not the only dude that ever lived. And, like, in 100 years, like, you could find, but also, like, it kind of flies in the face of everything that Steve Trevor was supposed to represent in the Wonder Woman movie, because, like, he died and sacrificed his life for the betterment of everybody. I mean, he destroyed the weapon. You know what I mean? Like, he made the choice to sacrifice himself. And so Wonder Woman, like, being sad, like, I mean, that's obviously not what Steve Trevor would want her to do. It's like,
it's not like she has a single person, like, not like somebody killed him, you know, and she
wants
revenge, and she's not, like, focusing on that or dwelling for 100 years. It's
just,
you know, ultimate sacrifice, literally, you know, save countless people after a war. Disrespect that. Not 100 years, though. Like, she was already, how old was she when they first met? You know, 100 years is a long time.
Right. Like, you can get, I mean, there needs to be a how Wonder Woman got her groove back. How Diana, like,
where's Wonder Woman? Bring her to Gal Gadot.
Right. And I think that's the movie I want to see next.
It's right, Hollywood. Let's get the stationery ready.
So another thing that we briefly talked about before that I know is something that bothers you is the idea of within both the Marvel and DC universe, there's numerous Playboy billionaires, right? There's Bruce Wayne, there's Tony Stark, there's Danny Rand, there's Oliver Queen, you know, sometimes Peter Parker's rich, you know, and swinging around. And there's basically no female Playgirl billionaires running around jet setting, kind of like being able to not only be like overtly sexual, but like, you know, if the roles were reversed, like if Catwoman was just like going around, or even like, let's say Batgirl was like, you know, sleeping around, and like her whole MO was like, she was like a supermodel, you know, playgirl who just kind of like slept around with dudes because that's what she did. And like, who cares? And like, she's rich and, you know, she can just call the Uber and like live her life and whatever. You know, because, you know, I've talked about this before too, like Bruce Wayne is literally sleeping with women as a cover for being Batman. Like, that's like, it's bad enough if he was just like a fuck boy, but like on top of that, like, it's just like, you're not even like, you're not even a person to him. Like, you're a cover for like Batman activities.
You know what would be cool? A cool take for Batman with that, now that you bring it up, as, you know, him sleeping around as a cover to maintain Bruce as like this, you know, billionaire, playboy, philanthropist, whatever. Because I'm thinking like, oh, so all those women are Batman's beards. So I'm like, okay.
Yeah.
Is he like, you know, in the closet in some way? Or what if he's actually just Ace, but he has to play this up because people don't know what Ace is?
Maybe. I
think something's wrong. And Batman's just really like, what he's really super into is caves and darkness and, you know, different shades of gray.
I'm sure that DC is listening right now. So,
come on, DC. Let me write this story.
Yeah, she's available.
Let me write Ace Batman. It'll be great.
I mean, his dog is named Ace. So it might be him.
giving some clues. Some context clues here.
He's just letting us know. but yeah, I mean, I wonder, because, you know, even kind of extending from that idea as well, it's just like the general shaming of women in terms of their sexuality. Whether you're talking about Emma Frost, whether you're talking about Black Widow, you know, or any, I mean, again, She-Hulk is the only one that I can think of who has been somewhat allowed to be overtly sexual in a way that's not like shaming her. And I don't know if that's just because she can just beat the crap out of everybody, so nobody's gonna like,
she's not gonna let anybody get away with shame.
Yeah, but nobody's like, gonna talk shit behind She-Hulk's back. But
all those superheroes can beat the crap out of somebody, so it's not just because they're not big and green, you know.
Yeah.
Part of me wonders if it's just kind of the writers that She-Hulk has had, or in a weird way, She-Hulk being, you know, She-Hulk being big and muscular and everything, gaining some sort of like male privilege in that level of being able to kind of play around. But even then, it's still not on the same level of like Tony Stark, you know, Batman. After going, you got a dick on each arm, like,
right? Like, it's just weird, because I mean, obviously comics to a lot of extents are just male power fantasies. And like, you know, these characters are written and designed to kind of be like the ultimate, like, this is who you would want to be. You would want to be, you know, this powerful,
rich,
virile, muscular, right? You know what I mean? Like, all the women want you, kind of thing. But it's also like, I think it doesn't allow for shades of masculinity. You know, what I mean? Kind of just like says, this is the standard, and if you're not meeting this, then like, you don't fit in. But also, again, like, women, it probably has something to do with the lack of women writing women characters, but also something to do just with, from a society standpoint, you know, there's still a stigma around women's sexuality and, you know, being able. And like, you know, the difference between because something that happens a lot too is that women's sexuality is used as like a tool. You know what I mean? Like Black Widow or somebody, Silver Sable will kind of use Black Cat, Catwoman will use their sexuality in a way to kind of get the upper hand on.
Yeah. Like, oh, I can't, you know, surely I can't defeat you in single hand-to-hand combat, even though I just did that to like 10 other guys in the hallway.
But right.
You, I have to sex.
Yeah.
You, that's my secret weapon, feminized weapon, like, you know, weaponized femininity, you know.
Right. And it's kind of like, you know, I mean, again, I think it detracts from those characters in terms of their actual sexuality being portrayed as a healthy thing and B, just a natural, like a natural human thing. You know what I mean? Yeah. Because like when, again, like when you use sex as when it's not something that is a, like, a consensual, you know, thing that you're pursuing purely either because, you know, like anybody who's, you would say, sexually active, you know, somebody who's not ace or like just isn't like about sex, like, you know, if you're pursuing sex, you know, hopefully it's not like just like to use other people.
Yeah, I'm here to manipulate you with my love.
Right.
You know, that nonsense. It's just one of those plots that I don't know if this is just coming from me from an ace background, because I do identify as, you know, on the asexual spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I usually just, that plot bores me to tears. You know, a plot's like, oh, I'm going to get information from him, my lord, by seducing him. You know, I'm like, okay, I see not, you know, never, obviously.
Right.
And it doesn't seem clever anymore. It seems so overused.
Well, it's, I mean, again, it's crazy when you think about the women that do it, right? Because Emma Frost is a literal telepath.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's in some ways with her, like, it can be used as a power move, but also, like, sometimes it's just unnecessary because she can literally read your mind. You know, with people like, you know, Black Widow and Catwoman and Black Cat, like, you know, there's nothing wrong with, say, being like flirty, but like when it comes to being like, oh, right, like, right, like they're undercover, so like they have to like sex this dude to like get the thing that they need to get, when it's like, but aren't they like expert spies and assassins and thieves and like all these other things, and don't they have other tools and ideas where they could like get the same thing without taking their clothes off, you know? Like,
but Jordan, she's got titties. We have to show them at some point.
That is true.
We have to show the cleavage. it's one of those things where, like, you see it in movies and in comics where weaponized sexuality is something only female characters seem to do.
Right.
And then when you get to the male characters, whenever there's any, you know, like, oh, I'm going to seduce someone, it's never like, oh, I'm going to do this to get the information. I'm just going to like do this to get their guard down. You know, think of like, I'm so brain farting on names, like James Bond movies, like the old movies where it's just like, oh, I'm seducing them, but they, you know, somehow, oh, James Bond, and they're weak in the knees. And then, they, you know, suddenly like they just lose all their, you know, value, like their original, you know, villain alignment. And they're just, oh no, he's sexy, I'm into it.
Right.
It's like there's a disparity in the two ways that these characters use that sexuality as like a weapon, so to speak, you know?
Right. And even again, when you think about costuming, like very rarely are male costumes designed to be overtly sexual and like, you know, like drawing attention to certain regions. And on the other hand, you've got, you know, up until I guess recently, like, you know, Dagger from Cloak and Dagger with just a huge boob window. Power Girl, huge boob window.
You know, Superman, a boob window, you coward.
Or just a crotch window, or just kind of like, you know, some kind of weird, yeah.
That could be functional and visually appealing. How right, did they be in those suits? Nobody knows.
It's like a just assless chaps or something. I mean, there's a lot of different ways they could work around that. I want to get your perspective on this as well, because something else that I've heard people be frustrated by, and I find it a little confusing myself too, is the secret gay trope, where all of a sudden you've been reading this book about this character, and then all of a sudden, for whatever reason, they're like, oh, like, yeah, now they're gay, you know, like, not even like now they're gay, but just like, but like, it's used oftentimes in a way, just, you know, for the sake of like, we've got one.
Mm-hmm.
And less from a standpoint of like, oh, like, this makes actual story sense. Like again, like your Batman story, where Batman is actually Ace, and it's just been using, like, there's a way that you can work around that. But I feel like, you know, a lot of times, whether it's all kinds of diversity, whether it's sexual orientation, whether it's you know, from a race background or a gender background, like, a lot of times they just throw things out there to kind of play diversity bingo in a way.
Yeah.
So they can just be like, we got one. Cause even I think what it is a lot of times, even more so in respect to trans identity, where they kind of play around with that stuff and they're just like, hey, guess what? This is happening now. And like, it's not even, cause I think what I've heard a lot from LGBTQ creators is that their preference would be just make them out from the start. Like, just where it's very clear up front, this is a queer character.
Oh, man.
You know, you don't have to play any guessing games. You don't have to wonder if this is happening.
There's the frustration, because people are like, oh, but why should we write these characters any different than our hetero characters? They're just normal people, too. And it's like, yeah, they're just normal people. But when the vast majority of the population reading books and a lot of the autos, the automatic assumption for these characters is that they're hetero, they're cis hetero when you're reading things, unless you say it in the story or show it
right
through character action or something, you at the end of the story, when everything's done and put out there, going, oh, by the way, they're gay, or by the way, they're trans, you know, is worth nothing unless you put the representation in the story itself.
Right.
You know, like Dumbledore being outed after, like, years after the fact, when the books were done, is like, is right. complete nonsense, you know, spoilers. and I have friends who are like, oh, it all makes sense because if you look back in their story with Grindelwald, I'm like, no, we shouldn't have to dig for context
right
in between the lines. It should be in the lines,
right?
You know? Like, he's old as dirt, you know, he's saying all this, like, he's not going to casually mention, oh, you know, I had a boyfriend once, so she's great, she's wonderful. That was my Dumbledore impression.
Nice.
That trope bugs me so much, because it definitely does seem like they want to come up and get their cookies. You know, oh, I had a gay character. Where's my cookie? Where in the story did you show? Did you represent that sexuality, that gender identity? Like, you can't just, you know, say it after the fact. We have to see it. That's part of what representation is, you know, being able to see it and to read it and to follow that character in the story with this knowledge, with this ability to either reflect, you know, on this character, see yourself or see your friends or see something that's different than you, but see it normalized because it's written, like, you know, all right, John Joe came back, you know, after his one-nighter with, you know, Jimmy John. I don't know, I'm bad at names, you know, and just made himself a sandwich and continued on with the story. And that could be the only mention of John Joe being gay and getting some D, but it was in the book.
Right.
You know?
And I think that's the biggest thing, is that, you know, in a lot of different ways, it's never enough just mm-hmm. to state things. Like, you don't need to have a character just, like, walk on panel and, like, wave to the reader and be like, I'm gay, and then just, like, walk away. And, like, but to have them actually live the experiences of the people that they're supposed to be representing, I think mm-hmm. is a real issue, because, you know, if your gay character is the one is like a secondary character,
mm-hmm.
like just is there to support the primary character and never gets any storyline and never gets any
mm-hmm.
like depth or development, and the only thing we know about them is that they're gay.
I have my gay best friend, my gay BFF. He helps me shop. He's so knowledgeable. Like, that's even worse to me. It's just kind of, it's frustrating. But then it kind of, you know, as soon as we do get gay characters in the front line as, like, you know, main characters, or at least characters with a side plot next to the main characters, so much of it is like, oh, suffering. Gay right. suffering stories. And I'm like, mm-hmm. why can't there just be a, you know, lesbian just out there trying to get her hair done, you know, and then stopping evil at the side? Like, why does it have to be suffering, you know? Like, well, we know it happens, but, like, we can tell other stories too. We don't have to sell grief pain here.
And I think that's again, a part of having more LGBTQ creators telling these stories,
mm-hmm.
So they can add more depth to it, because yeah, I feel in a lot of the same way. I mean, as like when I read books that have, you know, black characters in there, it's like, you know, it's a double view for me, because sometimes it's like, you know, like I appreciate the representation, but like they're not living a life that I recognize, because they mm-hmm. don't deal with anything that I deal with. So it's just kind of like, yeah, I guess this is good, but like also like none of this is actually relatable to me. But yeah. On the other hand, like when you go the full tilt the other way, it's like, well, like my life isn't shitty.
It's like the information they're getting from and how to write, you know, like how to write a black character is, you know, I saw it on the news. It must be the same for everybody.
Right.
Now, that's what the life consists of. No, they have hobbies,
right?
This dude has hobbies. Maybe he's super into scrapbooking,
right?
Like, have the man make a scrapbook. That's a good chapter. Let me write your stories about, you know, Ace Batman and scrapbooking, y'all.
Yeah.
This is gonna be great.
Ace Batman could scrapbook. I mean, he's got a lot of history.
I bet he puts a mean scrapbook together.
I mean, look at the Batcave and all the things that he collects. Anyways, I feel right, like,
man.
Yeah.
I want Batman at a crime scene with the freaking Instax Fujifilm camera. Just arrest the Joker again. Click. Opportunity.
Gordon's like, "What is that for evidence?" And Batman's like, "Evidence. Yes."
And he slides out of panel, off frame, into the darkness. Let me write this book, man.
So, are there any other things that you can think of that kind of just automatically will turn you off from a romance or from a relationship standpoint?
Oh man, how much time do we have? I think of like just common tropes in romance. Like you have the main character who's, you know, this is a girl who's kind of like the wallflower. She's ugly because she has glasses, you know, and no one's gonna ever notice her because she has glasses. Oh, she took her glasses off and, you know, hot boy noticed her. This is so perfect. Like, that's just, you know, bare minimum coverage of that whole topic, you know.
Right.
You're not worthy of love or attention until you get a makeover, you know.
Right.
Like that nonsense. Or, you know, either it's complete like style makeover, or suddenly she got made over for a party, or you know, lost weight, or some nonsense like that. It's just kind of like, what if someone took that trope, like, you know, she had the makeover, tried to get, you know, jazzy hot dude in class, didn't work out, jazzy hot dude turned out to still be a surface level, you know, douche, and like didn't work out. It's just kind of like, okay, well, I'm still living my life.
Yeah.
But, you know, not need this jazzy hot level dude, and mm-hmm. not have that like other guy in the background who's like the nerdy kid. Oh, and who's like, oh, I realized I was actually in love with my nerdy best friend the entire time. Cause that's another bad trope.
Yeah.
For like male movies.
Well, the whole nice guy trope, I think, is very creepy in the sense that it's always like, the expectation that you're meeting the basic minimum of human decency like means that you should be automatically bumped to the front of the line of like, I mean it totally destroys the idea of any kind of platonic friendship where like any
I want a platonic friendship movie or plot, because like I have the guy friends I've had conversations where they like, I never had like a friend that was a girl, you know, that wasn't like a girlfriend, and I'm like, really?
That's weird.
Sad.
Yeah.
That's so sad. Like all these movies that are out there, you know, that don't allow that. You can't be, you know, a platonic relationship between a cis man and a cis woman unless one of them is gay or taken,
right. Mm-hmm.
You know, or related, you know, like just, it's possible. It's a thing.
Definitely, yeah, and I think again, it's a healthy thing to have,
seriously,
in general, but also in media. And I think again, like that whole, I mean, in nerd culture in general, you know, the nice guy trope is a big thing, but also, just from the standpoint of, like, women. I feel like a lot of the times, you know, just from conversations that I've had with women, it's a very dicey situation whenever you're just showing general kindness to
a man. Yeah, I think you're flirting or something.
Because they think you're flirting, but also like they feel like, oh, like this is somebody who like just the quick emotional attachment that some guys make, which is kind of disturbing. I mean, this is my big problem with Wolverine and Jean Grey, is it seems like, you know, like she reached out to him out of genuine kindness and just like something she would do for anybody who was in the situation that he was. And he responded with like, I love this woman, we need to be together forever. You know what I mean? But like,
it's like, whoa, dude, I just fixed you up because you were jacked, like someone messed you over. I'm not into this.
Right. And I think it turns into just this weird like dependency kind of thing. And then I mean, again, like even recently with Henry Cavill and all of his comments, but specifically his comments that come down to like chasing women, like the idea of like chasing somebody is kind of, I mean, it's strange just from the standpoint of like, if there's somebody that you like, right, like there are ways that you can talk to them and be around them that don't involve you like making shit up, so like that you're like both somehow, you know, in the same place at the same time, and like all these random coincidences that you keep, you know, manufacturing. So it's like, hey, we keep bumping into each other, where it's like really you're just like stalking their like Facebook and like just figuring out where they're gonna be, and you just keep showing up and like trying to like initiate conversation. Because if somebody likes you and they want to talk to you, they also have the ability to reciprocate.
Yeah.
And they like, I feel like most people who are open to relationships, if they meet somebody who is nice and genuine, like they'll at least take the initial steps into, you know, exploring that.
Yeah. But and it's frustrating because like guys are brought up to think, oh, they have to be the aggressive one, and you know, and this, they have to make the first move, you know.
Right.
We're like talking up someone. Certainly they can't let a woman ask them out.
Right. And they can't like, but they also can't take no for an answer. Like if the initial answer is no, then it's like, well, now it's a challenge and I have to like,
I just had to Google what Henry Cavill said. Yeah. Like I was behind. I live under a rock and I'm like never up to date. Wow, that's creepy.
Yeah. No, again, it's like it's the idea. I mean, he said some other shit, which is also just crazy. But the idea of like chasing a woman down, like just basically, there was a story I read where this dude like finally in his, like they were both in their 60s, like finally like got together with the girl that he had a crush on in high school. But it sounded like what happened was he literally just wore her down for 60 years or however many years it was.
That's so insane. It's romantic. It's like, so crazy. creepy.
Right. And people are like, oh, how sweet. Like they like fate brought them together. And it's like, no, like dude just like never stopped fucking with her. And then she was like, fuck it. Like,
yeah, my girlfriend brought this up to me about like the trope where this the guy, you know, basically stalks her and like does not leave her alone, you know, until she gets he gets an answer or she says yes, and he's like, oh, I just wore her down. That's not romantic. I just wore her down. Like dude. And it's just it's so tiring. It's so frustrating to have that plot continued and like still seeing movies coming out with it, you know. Just I wore her down and she finally said yes, and I'm like, move on, you're wasting so much time and your energy. Obviously she wasn't interested. Find someone else, my dude. Like, well, pick up a hobby. Like,
right. But or like there's more women or men or whatever you're interested in. And like, again, like sometimes, yeah, sometimes it's not the right time. Like sometimes, you know, like things come together years later, you know, like that happens in life. But like, if the initial reaction is like, not into that, then, you know, like your response should be like, okay, you know, like accept it. If you actually like this person, like you should respect what they want. Mm-hmm. And if they don't want you, like then just let it go, because it's not worth any of that. And I mean, again, you're gonna the chances of you just alienating this person are very high.
Oh yeah.
B like that's just generally unhealthy behavior to like, because I think, again, out of comics, you know, what happens a lot of the times today, you know, with all of the social media and the technology and stuff, is that people become obsessed over people that they don't even know in real life. Like, they know your internet persona and like the things that you post online, and then they become obsessed and attached to that. And not even necessarily saying that, you know, people are faking it on the internet, but like the idealized version of this person that you are, you know, quote unquote falling in love with, or whatever you call it,
is not
that person that you're gonna be in real life.
That's the surface of the iceberg. There's a whole other like mile deep level of iceberg you aren't seeing.
Yeah.
And there was a comment about like, you know, it's artists, creators, people, you know, only put a certain percentage of themselves out on the internet, because you have to reserve a certain amount of yourself away from that, because people on the internet, I don't know what it is about like Twitter, about like just internet in general, if they follow you or if you're friendly and occasionally every now and then like, you know, like or reply to a comment they make, they suddenly have like a really immediate like familiarity with you, you know, and
right.
They only see a surface level of like your internet presence, or they see maybe another friend of yours comment and you guys make some, you know, stupid jokes that like,
right.
You know, you, because you know that person, you know, like you can make jokes with them that may seem kind of rude, like you're riffing on each other. But right. Someone you don't know can't just step in and suddenly be like, ha, you jerk. You know, it's like, do I know you? Who are you coming in my house? I don't know you.
Right. Like, well, and I think, again, for women especially, you know, it goes back to the idea of like, just because a woman is nice to you and like engages in conversation with you on the internet does not mean that that's an open invitation to like stalk them. And like, I mean, because there's a difference between, you know, you're online, you're interacting with somebody, you're liking their tweet, you're like, you know, commenting on, and then like every single thing they do online, like you are like responding to it in some way, shape or form. And like that becomes very creepy and very overbearing and very weird. And like, you know, again, in comics, like sometimes, like, I mean, obviously there's not all that social media stuff, but like you'll see plot points where dudes just kind of like just wear some of these women down, or like, or even, you know, from the respect of like they like fuck up you know, it's like, oh baby, I didn't mean to, like, you know, do whatever dumb shit I did. Forgive me.
I didn't sleep with your sister. I love you, baby.
Right. You know, and again, especially in X-Men and all these like Fantastic Four, where it's like, I didn't mean to sleep with the clone of yourself from the future who came back as somebody else to, like.
If you have the energy and the creative mind to come up with a plot as convoluted as future clone, you have the energy and creative mind to come up with a plot that's not, I slept with your basically sister. I'm sorry, baby, take me back.
Take me back.
Take me back, baby. Like, you can come up with something else. And that kind of ties into, like, the tropes where, you know, Superman, Lois Lane kind of, you know, constantly saving the damsel in distress, and you know, oh, says she's gonna fall in love with him because he keeps saving her, you know,
right.
That's, you know, some kind of syndrome, right? That's,
you keep waiting for her to fall off a building. Maybe one day
she will make out with you.
Well, let's bring things to a close here with, oh, yeah. I want to ask about, from your perspective as somebody who writes and also draws, what are some of the things that you look for when you're creating a romance, whether it's writing these characters, or it's drawing romance and intimacy? What are some of the things that you try to do in your own work?
Well, considering my favorite kind of romance to see an intimacy isn't overtly sexual, because that gets played so much, it's boring to me. Even at, like, if I weren't an ace person, I feel like, okay, I need something else. My favorite things are small acts of intimacy. You know, writing out a slow burn between characters, you know, maybe where they didn't, you know, start off kind of knowing each other, but they do small acts of kindness for each other that kind of start adding up naturally, like gradually over time, you know. And even if there's a couple that is together, like romantically together, just small, like, gestures. I especially love drawing small gestures, because, like, I like to focus on expression in the face and body language.
Mm-hmm.
Body language is super important in comics, even if they're not moving, especially because they're not moving. Just small things, like they're standing next to their significant other, like, oh, I'm gonna, you know, fix your collar or fix your tie, or your little, some of your hair is out of place, I'm gonna, you know, fix that, you know, or just, you know, casually standing next to them, you have your hand in their back pocket, you know, just casually, like, chilling next to each other. Just my favorite, I have some like OC characters with my girlfriend, because we're nerds, where we had canon that, like, they're a couple of lazy cats. They're always laying on, like, leaning on each other, or always, like, touching in some way, even if it's just kind of like sitting next to them and, like, leaning on them, or like sitting next to each other in some way that kind of signifies that they trust each other to be within that physical space close enough. That is, like, my favorite kind of, like, hint, cue, little small gem of romantic, you know, enjoyment that I like seeing in comics and in books and in movies, anything. You know, it doesn't have to be grand, overt, you know, babe, I got you these flowers and some chocolates. You know you like flowers and chocolates. You know, something like that, like, because that's just overplayed and tired.
Right.
You know, it's just the little things are what's important.
Well, and I think that, you know, because I've had this conversation with artists too, like, it is, I find those are some of the hardest things to write and some of the hardest things to express visually, because so much of relationships and romance are those small, intimate gestures and, you know, body language. And again, for couples that have been together for a long time, a lot of that is just kind of unspoken, like, this, like, invisible communication that they have between them, where, you know, it isn't, you know, especially when you think about, like, say, like, older couples, right? Like, they're not making out in the street anymore, like, when they were like 20, but it is a lot of just, like, very small, slight gestures, eye contact, you know, just, you know, intimate touches that aren't necessarily, like, again, either, like, sexual or, like, overtly romantic, but are just kind of like, I care about you, you know, and I want to show you, And, you know, so maybe it's, yeah, we're just holding hands, or we've got like our pinkies locked together, or just something that's just like not like big, like you're talking about. But, yeah, you know, it can be, I think that's something that I always appreciate when I see it in comics, especially just because I know how hard it is to effectively pull that off.
Yeah. Especially if you're writing like an issue or something, and there's like a really dramatic plot going on. So maybe there's not really time or space to write in like a scene specific to a couple that you want to pay focus to. It could literally be like sitting around the brief table, you know, the mission table, you know, going over the details, the specs for, you know, great X-Men mission, insert mission name here. And it could literally be the couple is like literally standing next to each other, and they're focused on the mission. They're like, you know, locked eyes with their leader are, you know, but they're just, you notice them, you can draw them kind of like leaning a little against each other, or like, you know, in each other's space, like overlapped a little, like not like, you know, on top of each other or anything, but just kind of close enough to each other that it's like you can tell that there is a natural connection there.
Definitely.
Even if you're not thinking about it, people unconsciously tend to stay closer to people that they're more comfortable with. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be a romantic partner or anything. It could be your best friend. You know, if you are closer with someone a lot of the time and you're in a room or with other people, you know, a lot of times you are going to be closer to that person physically, like standing closer to them, and just little things like that. It doesn't have to be like huge, but if they're anything like me, I'm looking for those signs. I'm looking for the little details in the background, because it's kind of hard for me not to as a comic artist as well.
Right.
And fans definitely look for it. Oh, the amount of times I've seen like people like do really tight crops on like a panel, you know, like what, there was some X-Men comic, I can't remember, but there was like a party scene and it was a huge crowd, and the artist put in like little Easter eggs of different characters. And then Charles and Magneto were in the background, kind of like, I think Magneto was carrying Charles, and someone zoomed in and cropped that. And like, they notice, fans will notice.
They're right.
Like, oh, there's my OTP doing cute stuff. Zoom.
Right.
And they will appreciate that later. So yeah, like, just, it's the best part.
Well, I think that's a good place to close things out. It just hit me that I need to have you back on so we can talk Scarlet Witch.
Yes.
I know you have a lot of Scarlet Witch opinions, and it's, again, she's somebody who, man, in terms of romances and relationships, she's been through
I talk to my friends about this, and like, if I ever get a chance to pitch a story to Marvel about any character, I want like slice of life Scarlet Witch. It could just be a one shot. I don't even care.
Yeah.
You know, let me write Scarlet Witch going to Starbucks. You know, like, I want her to be happy.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but it's the chaos magic, you know?
Happy magic.
Well, let everybody know where they can find you on the internet, if you're going to be at any conventions coming up this year, and if you have any projects coming up, they should be on the lookout for.
Well, you can find me on Twitter at Naomi Frank. It's Frank with a Q at the end. Same thing for our website, naomifrank.com, and on Instagram and on Patreon. Right now, I'm just working on, you know, some small time gigs, working on like a project with Kazoo Magazine, a little Frida Kahlo bio comic, and some stuff I can't announce yet because nothing's really solid. But hopefully soon have some really cool, fun projects out there for everyone to look at. Thank you.
Get that Misfit City Volume 1. Is Volume 2 out as well?
Volume 2 has been out, yes. Definitely go look through Boombox. Misfit City Volume 1 and 2, the complete set with bonus sketches in the back, are out with Boombox right now, written by Keely Smith and Kurt Lustgarten. If you are familiar with Legally Blonde and 10 Things I Hate About You, thank Keely. She is a screenwriter from those. And if you are into, you know, the Goonies or just fun young adult romps and adventures, you're going to love Misfit City.
Nice. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on, Naomi. Obviously, we'll talk again soon.
Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. And thanks, everybody, for listening. Catch you next time.
See ya.
All right, y'all. That's going to do it for this week's episode of Stark After Dark. Big thanks to Naomi Frank-Keys for coming on and talking with us. Be on the lookout for Ace Batman coming from Naomi in DC, hopefully sometime soon. If you like the show, you can help us out by liking and subscribing and all that good stuff on whatever podcast provider you're listening on. If you want to get in contact with us, you can reach out at starkafterdarkpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know if you have any questions, ideas, etc. You can find me on Twitter at JRSosa18 on Twitter. And you can also, if you're so inclined, support us on Patreon, J. Clark Comics on Patreon. I'm going to be putting up some essays, reading lists, stuff like that. So check that out. Next week, we're going to have on artist Vince Underwood. Going to talk all about Lois Lane and Superman, all their crazy relationship stuff over the last 75 years. So be on the lookout for that. And I'll see you next week.